Here, what's good, everybody? Welcome to 808s and Ankle Breaks, episode 49. It's the hip hop and basketball based podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Kerma, EIC of the Amherst Wire. With me is my other host,
Trevor Wilson, entertainment editor for the Amherst Wire. And the weather's getting chilly, but we're still bringing the heat for you, ladies and gentlemen. Episode 49. Kerm, what do we got for him today?
You know what it is. We got that slap or skip per usual, where we talk about the hottest singles of the week. After that, we'll be talking Earl Sweatshirt's latest 7-track EP, Feet of Clay. And then for basketball, we'll be doing a game of buy or sell for all of, the early starts of from the early start of the season, kind of gauging on what's real and what isn't, essentially. But before we do all that, slap or skip time. As I said before, it's the hottest singles of the week. If we like it, it's a slap. If we don't, it's a skip. If it's in between, it's a meh. Let's do it. First track, Frank Ocean, In My Room. What'd you think of it, Trevor?
Easy slap for me. Frank Ocean is 2 for 2 since coming out with DHL. Pacey Drums got a real nice bounce to this one. Got these like watery synth, plucky synths in the background to drive the melody, but Frank's got some pretty braggadocious lyrics about his luxurious life, but he's also got some pretty artistic metaphors in there about the music industry. One that I picked out was, he goes, "Got this lust for life in me, horny for the game, first they kiss, then they bite soft, then that gonna play it off."
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So some solid lyricism here from Frank, but it's a slap from me.
I'm going to give this one a meh. I just have felt like very indifferent about this track, and that's rare for me to say from Frank Ocean. Mm. I think maybe because I hold Frank to a certain standard.
Right.
This track, it's not that it's bad by any means. That's why I'm giving it a meh, not a skip. It's just like, I'm not really sure what it's missing. Maybe it's the fact there isn't really like a hook. There isn't anything in this track specifically that draws me in. I do agree with, the artistic metaphors in there, as well as like it's a good balance in terms of his rapping on this,
where
he's
sure.
Balancing just simple flexing as well as, the deeper artistry that he's known for.
Yeah.
But it's still, I just feel like there's something missing with this track. I can't really put my finger on it. It feels almost like a throwaway for Frank's standards.
It kind of does.
But based on the cover art, I think this is going to be on the next album, because on the previous track that came out, DHL. Yeah, DHL. At the bottom of the cover art, you see like 12 like images, and then one is highlighted. This track also has the 12 images at the bottom, and it's a different track highlighted. So I think this is all leading towards like a 12-track album.
Man.
So I'm still looking forward to it. I'd say these 100%. Two singles that both of them definitely didn't miss. I'd say this one, I'm indifferent towards it so far.
Gotcha.
Next we got 21 Savage, Immortal. Trevor, what'd you think?
I'm gonna skip this. Not really feeling this one. Pretty standard stuff from 21. Just the same murderous lyrics that he always comes through with. I guess it was used for the Mortal Kombat trailer, so maybe that's the reason it's not as well developed as maybe some of his other tracks. But I mean, what better guy to get on a track for Mortal Kombat than 21 Savage?
Very, very true. I'm also going to give this a skip. So this track has an enjoyable beat, nothing out of the ordinary. So I'm not even going to waste time talking about it. It's enjoyable, but I think the song structure, as well as, I guess, the lyrical substance, really holds this back from being, a listenable track in my eyes. In terms of structure, the hook doesn't come in until 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Wow.
So it's literally just one verse for, like, 2+ minutes, and that's not what I want from 21 Savage. I think there are artists that can pull off 2-minute verses. We're going to talk about Earl Sweatshirt's album. His album doesn't really have any hooks on it. For someone like 21 Savage, when in terms of the substance, it's pretty, basic, just, talking about murder and street violence without really any, like, clever, wordplay or anything like that. It's usually pretty easily digestible.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I'm going to just say, it's a no for me. I just don't really want to listen to a 2-minute long 21 Savage verse.
Right.
So that's why I'm going to give this one a skip. Next, we got Young Thug featuring Gunna and now Travis Scott on the Hot Remix. What'd you think of this one, Trevor?
I'll give this a slap, really only because the song didn't really get any better or worse. And I think the song was still really good to start with. I think Trav's verse is pretty entertaining, and I think he fits pretty well with the beat, too. But That's really all I gotta say. Like, I don't think he adds anything like super positive or negative to it. He's kind of just there, but it's still a slap.
We're pretty much in the same boat. I gave it a meh, but it's like, it's not because I'm not gonna play the song. I think it's probably now, just because you add Travis Scott with the namesake, it's probably gonna get played more than the original.
Right.
So I might swap that out of my playlist, but yeah, there's nothing added from Travis being on here other than the name value. I think his verse isn't necessarily bad, but I will say it doesn't necessarily, you know, ignite the track where it feels like, oh, this remix is like 10 times better than the original. I think Travis, in terms of the lyricism, he's never been a lyrical guy, but you know, there's nothing that really sticks out. And then in terms of like the energy, I wish there was a little bit more there. I also wish, you know, maybe the flow he kind of switched up. It was that same, you know,
same
laid back flow that give like a pause this for the ad libs. I just, you know, I thought he could have been more creative with the feature. But still, it's not like he took away from the track to the point where it's unlistenable.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I'm going to give it a meh. Next, we got Vince Staples' Sheet Music, episode 2 of the Vince Staples Show. What'd you think of this one, Trev?
This is a slap for me. I love this song. Super catchy and really bouncy. Really fun and bright. Instrumental. Still got that West Coast sound to it with that, I think it's like a synth bass he's got driving the sub bass of the whole song. But what I really like about this track is Vince is trying something a bit new. He's doing a little bit more sing rapping, if that makes sense. Like, his delivery is
That's what I had in
my notes. His delivery is a lot different.
Even like a little bit of auto-tune in the verses.
Yeah, and it sounds good. Like, I love the song. It's been stuck in my head since I listened to it. But yeah, it's a slap for me.
I love when we disagree on this show. I'm giving it a skip. Personally, you know, while I'm all for, you know, artists testing the waters in terms of different sounds, this track just didn't work for me. The instrumental, as Trevor said, is very, you know, lighthearted, very fun. I would say it's something more fitting like a Lil Yachty or even a Lil Uzi. And, you know, Vince, his rap singing, like, I wouldn't say it's bad and, like, totally just unlistenable, but I just don't think it's strong enough to carry a whole track. And he's kind of, he's doing this for, what, 2.5 minutes? No feature. And I think it kind of shows a little bit of, like, weakness in terms of Vince Staples in my eyes. I just don't think he's strong enough with the melodies to be able to carry it for a whole track. I also feel like, based on, you know, the standards I hold for Vince, I feel like he kind of dumbed down his lyrics like a lot. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
He kicks off his first verse with, you know, women who ain't got extensions, they depress me. Women who ain't had evictions, they depress me. Which is like kind of funny, but it's also kind of just like, I feel like there just isn't a whole lot there. And those are like the only two lyrics that kind of stuck out where I was like, oh, I should highlight these.
Right.
I just felt like in terms of what he typically can do in terms of like, you know, painting the picture of, you know, the street life that he used to live, maybe still does live. I used to live more likely than not.
Yeah.
I don't think he reached that level that he's had in the past. But that's just my opinion. It's also, you know, I do want to give him credit because it's like he tried something different on this. And, you know, it works for Trevor. I recommend you guys listening to see if you enjoyed it. But for me, it's a skip.
Gotcha. That's okay.
Next, we got Division featuring Future, No Crying.
All I'm going to say is, the first thing I'm going to say about this track is Future is influencing everybody in the worst way, bro.
Bro,
in
this
the worst way.
So toxic. Like, it's so toxic.
But this song is a slap. I'll start this song. With that said, this song is a slap. But see, like, I've been following Division for a while, and because it's two people. There's a producer and a singer.
Yeah.
And the singer, like, he's usually, like, really, like, lovey-dovey and like apologetic in his lyrics, and I'm like, all of a sudden Future shows up and that's all out the window.
No crying in the club.
No crying in the club. But I think this is a slap. Producer does a really good job of catering to Future on this one, and man, it's really clubby, but Division, this is outside of his purview usually, so I'm interested to see him exploring different themes.
Yeah.
Such as this.
Not going to lie to you. We got back-to-back disagreements. I'm giving this one a skip as well. For me, it was like the whole song concept of No Crying in the Club was like, I agree that Future clearly had an influence on Division, but I don't think Division has like had enough practice at being toxic. Cause like
clearly not.
Like the hook, I just feel like the hook doesn't really give me much. It's literally just like No Crying in the Club, which is like, by itself, like, the concept is, like, it's funny, but I just feel like there isn't much to it. Like, why is she crying in the club? Why? And I guess when you're toxic, like, you don't think about that. It's just like, stop crying, we're in the club. But I felt like I wanted a little bit more. And then I would say Future's verse is more exciting than the hook, and it definitely, you know,
I agree.
It picked me up and back into the track, but it's like, it's still just the same old on-brand toxic masculinity that Future's projects always kind of bring. Like, I heard the line, hood forever, I put shorties on my leashes.
I was just about to say that.
And like, line, the sad part is, like, I listened to that and I didn't blink an eye. I was like, this is like typical Future at this point. I gotta give it a skip.
Oh man.
I'm at that point where, like, the more Future I listen to, like, the more I'm like, yo, is this dude like hurting just men in general, where it's like women hear Future and they just think this is what all guys think? Because, like, some of his stuff is brutal.
Yeah,
like,
yep.
He has a bunch of bangers, but this one for me, I had to give a skip. lastly, we got Buddy featuring Kent Jams Hollywood. What do you think of this one, Trevor?
So I'm going to go with my fourth slap in a row here. I love Buddy's delivery on this thing. Pretty unique. He's braggadocious, but loose on this. I don't think the lyrics have anything necessarily, like, too substantial with them. But I love how he flips the hook from Rufus and Chaka Khan's Hollywood song. With the hook, he says, I'm on my way, gotta get up out the hood, on my way to Hollywood. And the original chorus is a lot different in the sense that it's like, he's on his way, about to get me. But I love how they flip it. It's a fun track, though, so I'm going to give it a slap.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest, I did not listen to this track enough to give any additional input based on what Trevor said. I will say I did enjoy it, and the two times I listened, just I didn't have a lot in my notes here that, you know, Trevor didn't already say. So it's a slap for me as well. But we will move on to talk about Earl Sweatshirt and his 7-track EP, Feet of Clay.
If you can even call it an EP.
Yeah, it's like, it's what, 15 minutes long?
I think 18.
Yeah, it comes.
And one of the songs is 4 minutes, which is like an eternity in Earl Sweatshirt time.
Yeah, so it is 15, not 18.
18,
yeah,
okay.
So 15. I guess initial impressions, Trevor. Let's start there.
To me, it feels like these are not my words, but these are words that I agreed with. Somebody on Twitter said that it feels like the epilogue to some rap songs.
Yeah,
which,
that's
like,
a good
upon
way to
reading
describe
that,
it.
I 100% agree with that. You know, I thought, obviously, with any Earl Sweatshirt project you're going to get, lyrically, it's very strong. Like, I mean, this guy's, like, pretty much a poet in the way that he writes these songs.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes the instrumentals, especially on this one, compared to some rap songs, felt, like, really confusing and, like, overbearing in a way that it's difficult to listen to.
Yeah.
It's difficult to really listen to it.
I would describe the instrumentals as almost, and really the album as a whole, is just off kilter.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously intentional. I think Earl is too, he's too smart of an artist where, like, this is done by accident, where, you know, you have beats like the one on East where, you know, it's got this cool accordion sample that just sounds dope, but then you realize there's no drums on it, which wouldn't be an issue, but then with Earl's rapping where it's like these kind of, like, never-ending flows, I'm like, is he on beat? Is he off beat? And it's very confusing where, like, he's intentionally, like, rhyming words in different spots than you would expect, where it's like, you know, you would think, oh, he ended the last line with this word, so the next line is going to end with him rhyming, but he'll rhyme the word before the end of the bar, which makes it kind of confusing where you're like, is that on beat? Is it off beat? And it's very interesting, so I don't want to say it's, you know, necessarily bad, but it's confusing to the ears. That's the best way to say it.
It's definitely confusing to the ears. And as somebody like myself who's a huge Earl Sweatshirt fan, I can understand why previously when I played some rap songs for some friends of mine, they were like, bro, turn the shit off. This is garbage. And I was like, no, it's not. Like, you gotta listen to it. But I mean, I get it. Like, it is really difficult to listen to sometimes just because, like, Earl himself can be a little bit distracting, along with the beat being distracting, or I don't even know beat, I guess just instrumental, because sometimes I don't even have drums on
it.
But yeah, I mean, it was still good. Like, I still enjoyed it, but it took me a couple listens to really enjoy it because I had to, like, really focus on what he was saying.
Right, yeah. I would say, me and Trevor were talking about this before, and one thing I said was, like, you know, reading the lyrics and listening to this project
two completely different things.
I think, yeah, when I was listening originally, like, I couldn't really stop to decipher any lyrics because, as I said, a lot of these flows he's using on this are just kind of nonstop. There's no hooks, really, on this project at all. unless I'm missing one that you can remember.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember any hooks on this. Like, the intro track, 74, it's like, he has some bars in there that are very clever, like, I would say, or very memorable, I will say. So, yeah. Like, Protect Your Neck and Don't Forget the Heart, where he references Wu-Tang on that lyric. And then you got other lyrics like Streets Flooded, like the pants weren't touching the sneak.
Love
which,
that
like,
line.
For me, when I first listened to it, I didn't catch it because it's like you didn't have any time to kind of let it breathe and really think about it. But then when I read it, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, the, you know, the double meaning of Streets Flooded, as in, like, his fan base are you know, the streets are flooded with music again because he released some rap songs last year. Versus the literal meaning of, you know, the streets flooded, like my pants weren't touching the sneakers, and, you know, rolled up pants because the streets are flooded. So there's a lot of, like, clever, there's a lot of clever bars and memorable bars, but when you're listening to it, it's just so hard to just, you know, take them in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes me kind of question, like, does that make it, you know, a bad project because, you know, sonically it might not be the most pleasing?
Right.
Because I feel like he's intentionally not being, like, pleasing. He's not trying to make pop music, clearly. Well, he's never made pop music, but this is so left field and obscure that it's like there's almost art in that. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So it's very difficult to kind of judge this one.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, I mean, I'm not going to speak for Earl Sweatshirt. I don't know him personally. But, like, I feel like with this EP especially and with some rap songs, it almost seems like he's less of a rapper and more of an artist or, like, a poet. Because, like, you read some of these lyrics and it reads like a poem.
Yeah.
But, like, then you just, you slap it on some instrumental and it kind of sounds like a mess.
Yeah.
But I think Earl, I will say, like, he's still, like, one of the best lyricists out there right now.
Easily.
I mean, yeah, like, I love some of the lines he has on this thing. He actually tweeted about the album. He said, Feet of Clay is a collection of observations and feelings recorded during the death throes of a crumbling empire, which I'm going to imagine is about Columbia, because he just left Columbia. I think this is his first record released off of Columbia Records.
Mm.
And he has some references to that, like in the intro track 74, he says, I'm not on board with the board you try and lead me on. He's just got some examples of wordplay like that, too. And then on El Toro Combo Meal, which... crazy name for a song, but this is the Pistons line Kerm and I we were talking about earlier. Pistons roaring like I'm Rashid, Pistons roaring like I'm Ben Wallace, Pistons roaring like Chauncey Phillips something, because I've been driving. And the way he says Phillip makes it sound like Billups, especially with the combination of something in there. But he's just got some incredible lyrics on here, and it's almost better to read the lyrics and actually listen to the album sometimes, because you'll get more out of it that
100%. way. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This is not a project that I think I'm going to be, like, replaying. I think we talked about this with some rap songs last year.
Yeah.
I remember you loved it, and I was like, I respect it. I respect the artistry, and I think this is, like, music that, you know, Earl needed to make, like, where, like, it's probably more beneficial to him than it is to, like, the listener.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, when you're able to, you know, decipher the lyrics when listening, it's a lot easier to enjoy it. And
yeah,
I think
for
me, this is just something where it's so intentionally weird and off kilter. And I love weird and off kilter, but, like, it's so strange in terms of, like, structure compared to all music, not even just, like, you know, popular hip hop, all hip hop in general. It's just off kilter even to that. Like, the only thing comparable would be, I guess, MF Doom, and it's still, it's even, I think the instrumentals are even more experimental than something Doom would use. So it's like, for me, it's just very hard to digest. I think that's the best way to say it. So it's like, I don't think I'm going to be coming back to it too much. Not that it's bad. I think also if you're like a diehard Earl fan, you're going to love it regardless. And it still reflects Earl. Like, it's not like this dude has changed as a lyricist. It's just, you know, depending on what's pleasing to your ear sonically, this might not fit it.
It's all about taste. And, like, for some people, this is just not their taste. Like, this is not the stuff that they're into. I mean, like, some rap songs I go back to frequently, but I feel I have to be in, like, a type of mindset or a type of mood to, like, really listen to an album like that, or even, like, an EP like this, where I'm just like, all right, like, I just want to sit down and, like, I just want to listen to the music for once, you know, not have it just just on.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a good project, but like obviously the main criticisms are that it's just it's confusing and weird as hell.
Yeah.
But we can close it there, unless you have any final thoughts, Kerm.
No, that's about it.
All right, so that's Earl Sweatshirt's Feet of Clay. Moving on to Ankle Breaks.
Everybody get up.
We are bringing back one of our best segments, the Fast Break, our quick little news rundown for you. So we'll go in reverse order here of, I guess, things that have happened in the past week and a half since we're going bi-weekly. So for those of you that don't know, Joel Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns are now both allowed to play after both players were suspended two games following a brawl between the two during their matchup last Wednesday. Crazy. Crazy
fight.
Brawl.
Crazy fight.
Ben Simmons had Cat in a chokehold.
Yep.
Cat tapped out.
The internet claims Cat tapped out, you know.
But I think he was just...
The streets are saying he tapped.
Just frustrated and he just hit his hand on the ground. But moving on from there, Atlanta Hawks young star John Collins suffers the same fate as DeAndre Ayton as he was suspended for 25 games after a growth hormone was found during a blood test. He's appealing for the ruling on the grounds that he didn't know the substance was in whatever he was taking. So we'll see how that goes for him. I mean, the guy's a beast.
Yeah.
I love the memes of it where it's like the NBA watching John Collins shoot, like hit open threes or something like that.
I did see that.
Like they knew something was up. But moving on, Warriors rookie Eric, is it Pascal? How do you say that?
Pascal.
Pascal.
That's how I've been saying it.
Who we'll talk about later this episode, scored a career-high 34 points and 13 rebounds in the Warriors' 127-118 win over the Blazers last Friday. DeAndre Jordan suffered a sprained ankle this week during the Nets' 135-125 win over the Pelicans. His timetable for return is currently unknown. And, of course, the big news, Warriors superstar Steph Curry will miss over 3 months of the NBA this season after suffering a broken hand in last week's game against the Suns. That is the Fast Break. That is your quick hit of NBA news. Now it's time to go on to buy or sell.
Yes, sir.
Buy or sell. So we got four teams, four players on here that we're going to be talking about. Are we bought on them? Are we sold? What's going on with these teams? So we'll start with the teams, and we'll open it up with, of course, the biggest story in the NBA right now, the Phoenix Suns. Yeah. 5-2.
5-2.
5-2. They beat the Warriors.
Yes, sir.
They beat the Warriors.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry broke his hand that game. So I won't gas it up too much, but... I mean, this is unprecedented for a Suns season.
There's a lot of things. We're definitely in... shout out Earth Gang. We're in Mirrorland right now in terms of the idea that the Suns are top of the West with the Lakers right now, who also have been, you know, struggling the past decade. And then, you know, the Warriors are looking like a surefire lottery team. It's weird.
It is so weird.
It's weird. But buy or sell the Phoenix Suns right now. I know they're 5-2, and I will also admit I have not watched a Phoenix Sun game yet. Like I'm trying. Like now I have to because they're 5-2.
I watched that Sixers game. Even though they didn't have Joel Embiid and Sixers, but still Booker was chopped in that game.
I'm gonna go sell. I just when you look at this roster, it's still Devin Booker is the only certified superstar. You still have Aiden out for what at this point? Still like 20 games, maybe even more than that. Still, it might be like 21.
Mm-hmm.
You still got Aiden out for 20 games. And I still don't know if I trust this roster. It's definitely better than it was last year. You have legitimate NBA players like Aaron Baines and Kelly Oubre is now getting a full season.
He's been good for them.
And he's been solid for him. But I just don't know if I can trust this team to hold out for a whole season to make the playoffs. I don't believe it. There's too many. It's not even them. It's the fact there's just too many talented teams in the West that I can look at right now, even if their record is worse than the Suns, that I can say are just on paper are better. I know the Jazz are better. They're currently not in the playoffs, but they probably will be. There's too many good teams in the West for me to fully believe that the Suns are capable of holding this up for a year. But who knows? Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe, Devin Booker is going to continue playing at this elite level and show that he's really, a top 15 NBA player that just, the past couple years hasn't had the best roster around him. Maybe this is the leap for him, where it's just a year or two sooner than people expected where he's, shown that he's ready to enter his prime now. So we will see, but that's my pick. What do you think, Trevor?
I want to buy in so bad. I want to buy in so badly on this Suns team, but I can't yet. It's only been seven games.
Yeah.
I can't yet. It's only been seven games. And
Suns have been too bad for too long for me to believe that right. they're good just off yeah. of being 5-2.
To your point about the West, like I was going to make the same point. Like there are easily like at least 9 or 10 teams that I can put ahead of the Suns.
Yep.
Like, and there are easily 8 that I can put ahead of them for the playoffs. I just, you know, they're on a good run of form to start the season. A lot of teams have the same thing and burn out really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not exactly bought in just yet. So I'm going to sell. Unfortunately, I'm going to sell. But I want to be wrong. I want to see the Suns in the playoffs this year. I think, like everybody, that would be an incredible story if the Suns made it to the playoffs.
Right.
But moving on from there, the Miami Heat.
I'm going to – so the Heat right now are also 5-2.
Also 5-2.
Well, I don't think they're going to stay on the pace of, you know, having a 700 win percentage. I will say I'm going to buy. I think the Heat are most definitely making the playoffs. They're one of those teams that are scarier than you know you would think going into the season. Right now, Tyler Hero is looking like elite. They also got the undrafted rookie, what's his name, Nunn or Munn, that's been balling Kendrick as well.
Yep.
And Jimmy Butler just got back last week. So, I'm interested in this team. I think they're just like something about Pat Riley and just the culture over there. They're always going to be a tough team. They've always been. Even when they're not in the playoffs or not like a contender, they've always just been a tough out where they're going to fight hard. And I think Jimmy Butler just embodies them so well. And I trust Jimmy. As long as he's healthy, I think this team is I'd say 6th seed at worst.
Yep.
So I'm gonna buy on the Heat. I'm not saying they're gonna be a top 3 seed, but I am saying they're definitely gonna make the playoffs. Right. So they're definitely gonna be a scary first round team.
Yeah, make it an order of two. I'm buying in on the Heat as well. They've consistently been like a fringe playoff team or like mostly a playoff team in the East Coast. And I don't think even with Jimmy Butler and even with – because I think there were a lot of questions around the Heat this year. Like, I certainly had a lot of questions around the Heat. But they're going to make the playoffs. Like, Eric Spoelstra has historically been a great coach. Like, I don't think he's ever let that franchise down. So I think the Heat have the pieces that they need. Like, Bam Adebayo's getting better, too.
Yeah, we should also mention they got rid of Hassan Whiteside, which is always a positive.
Always a positive. That dude sucks a lot. But – I really like how the Heat look. I think they'll be a tough team to beat in the East for sure. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, like, say what you will about the guy, but he's a player. Like, he'll always hustle. He'll always try to win you games. That's the Heat. I'm bought in on the Heat. How about the Dallas Mavericks?
This is a tough one. This is probably, of the four teams, this was the toughest one. Like, I'm still formulating the opinion as I speak. So I watched, you know, the Lakers play the Mavericks last Friday, and that was an NBA classic where they dueled. Howard, you know, had a illegal screen where, you know, pretty much just grabbed Seth Curry. The refs thought it looked like a real screen, so I'm going to say it's a real screen. But, you know, Danny Green hit that three to go into OT. Phenomenal game. Luka looks like a basketball god right now.
Yeah.
When you go
unreal.
Ahead and duel with LeBron James, and you guys both have triple doubles. It's also the first time that's ever happened they both set records of the youngest person to ever have a triple double and the oldest to ever have a triple double. So that was pretty impressive. Or what was it? It was something something about the oldest and youngest. Because I definitely wasn't Luka's first triple double, so I can't remember the exact stat. I think it was the oldest, or the stat line was to have like 30, 15, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was, because I think they were both 30, 15, and 10.
Right.
So I think that's what the stat was. But still, so Luka has looked like MVP level, and Porzingis has been solid. My thing is, it's like when you look who's around them, who are you really trusting for the rest of the season with that roster? At the end of that game against the Lakers in the regulation, once the Lakers started kind of guarding the pick and roll different where they weren't giving up the lobs anymore, Luka was hitting these skip passes to the corners to these shooters that just, you know, weren't really connecting. So it's like, I don't know how much I can trust the guys around him. A Seth Curry, like, is Seth Curry the third best player on the Mavericks? I hope not, but he might be. He really might be in terms of, like, I just don't know if they really have enough around those two. So I'm gonna go sell, but I wouldn't be surprised if they end up being like an 8 or a 7 seed. I just think they're gonna be dueling with teams like the Spurs, for the, you know, the end of the playoff seedings. So I'm gonna go sell.
Yeah. You make some good points there. I think I'm gonna buy in though. I like the Mavs a lot. I think they're legit, and I think it boils down to Luka. But my buy is completely contingent on the fact that Kristaps plays more like a big man, because right now he's playing more like a shooter.
Yeah,
he's shooting a lot of threes. He's not really taking it inside, and I think that's just because he's coming off an injury. Maybe he's not like physically where he needs to be just yet. But I only see both of them improving, and I think they'll bring other players up with them, even if they're older. Like Seth Curry is 29, but I think they'll be able to bring the rest of the team up with them. They're a fun team to watch.
They got
a lot of energy. I think they could surprise people and sneak into a 7 or 8 spot, like
I
you
agree.
Said.
It's not that I don't believe in this combo of players. I think they're elite. I think they're symbiotic, just like LeBron and Anthony Davis,
right.
Where it's just like their games complement each other. But it's just, I don't know if this season is the season for them in terms of, you know, who they have for support.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I think in the future, this is a future championship nucleus, but it's just a matter of getting the right people around them. But next on buy or sell, we got the Houston Rockets. You want to go first on this one, Trev?
Yeah. man, the Rockets have just been so, so shaky to start this season. And I keep looking at this graph. Have you seen this TPA graph for the Houston Rockets? All right, so basically what it outlines is it takes each player as a plot point. And on the y-axis, it has defensive points saved and offensive points added.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, James Harden is all the way to the right, but he's on the bottom, which means he's added a ton offensively.
Yeah, no, I've seen charts like that.
And Westbrook's in the top right, so Westbrook's their best player right now. Shh, don't say that too loudly. He's their best player right now. PJ Tucker is right up there with them. Clint Capella, not really adding a whole lot offensively, but saving some defensively. But Eric Gordon, man, Gordon stinks.
He's stinking it up.
He's all the way at the bottom left. All the way at the bottom left. That dude is so washed. I thought about dropping him from my fantasy team this week, but he barely made the tryouts. Barely made it through my second week tryouts. But you know what? The Houston Rockets, when you still have James Harden and Russell Westbrook, I'm not really worried. They're going to struggle. Like, I think any new duo of that magnitude is going to struggle.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time believing a shooter like Eric Gordon is going to stay in a season-long shooting slump. So I'm going to buy. I'm going to buy on the Rockets. I'm not going to sell just yet. But if they continue to play, like, I don't know, like, are they going to show up tonight? Are they not? Then maybe I'll change my mind. But I'm going to buy in on the Rockets for now based on the fact that I believe that in the long term, they'll still be a solid team.
Yeah, this is, I think, one, I always struggle with segments where it's like yay or nay, and there's no in between, there's no nuance to it, where it's like, you know, I can try and, you know, have that gray area and sound like I'm so clever with the thinking. If I got to go buy or sell, though, I'm not going to disrespect James Harden and Russell Westbrook and go sell.
Yeah.
They're two former MVPs. No matter how much I think, I don't know if they're really the ideal, you know, match made in heaven with each other. You know, the way I talked about, you know, LeBron and Davis being symbiotic, I don't think these guys are symbiotic at all. They're kind of, they play the same role, which is going to be, you know, difficult to figure out over the course of a season. But I agree. It's just there's too much talent between those two. You got a lot of good talent around them. I think defensively, that's where they really need to worry, and they really need 100%. To question, like, what are we doing to, you know, maximize how good we are defensively? But I'm still going to go buy. I just can't see them winning less than 50 games. They haven't done that since, I want to say, 2013, 2014. So it's been a while since they haven't, you know, won 50 games.
Right.
So I'm going to go ahead and still go buy. Now we got four players we're going to do for buy or sell as well. Eric Pascal, what do you think? What do you think, Trev?
You know, at first I thought this was a one-off performance, but I think I'm going to buy in on this dude. And I think that comes down to his minutes. Like, I'm looking at his minutes played over the last 5 games, and the games where he scored under 10, he's played under 20 minutes or 20 minutes or under. But when he gets more minutes, like in the Suns, even though they lost to the Suns, he had 20 points in that game. Against the Hornets, they lost in that game, but he had 25. And then, of course, he had his blow-up game against the Blazers with 34.
I don't know what I was doing up watching that game, but it was just it was hilarious to watch because the Warriors got up, like, I'm going to say six to between 6 and 10 at that point where it's like, oh, yeah, we could still maybe win this game or we could they could come back. Yeah. And like the Blazers got to the point because it was like under 2 minutes where they were like pressing full court, doing everything they could to beat this Warriors team with no Steph, no Draymond, no Klay, no D'Lo, no Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's not walking through that door. And they're still and they still went in and couldn't come back, which was hilarious to me. But yeah, Pascal, he's just a ball of energy from what I've seen so far. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a Pascal expert, but from that game, like you could see his imprint on the game. The 13 boards is almost, in my opinion, more important than the
34 points.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's just, he's kind of undersized. Like he's Draymond sized basically. Yeah. He's around like 6'7", 6'8". I might be wrong on that exact measurement, but he just doesn't look that big out there, but he's just all hustle.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go buy on him just because I can't name four other players in the Warriors right now, if I'm being honest with you. And I think he has the opportunity to really just, as in, when I say people on the Warriors, as in active players in the Warriors,
I can't really
name anybody else besides him, Jordan Poole. It's a small list. So I think he has the opportunity
Come on. Oh,
to,
he's not even playing.
His usage rate is about to be sky high, and he has the opportunity to just get those rookie numbers where, you know, in a couple of years, you're going to be like, what? He had this much as a rookie? He's got that opportunity right now, so I'm going to go buy.
Yep, I agree. If he gets the minutes, I think he'll really shine.
Yep. Brandon Ingram.
Oh, I'm all the way bought in on Brandon Ingram. I think this is his breakout year.
Yeah.
Like, not that any of his previous years were, like, bad per se, but he's on a different level this year, man.
For sure.
He's really carrying this Pelicans team right now on his shoulders.
Yeah, I think he's just been given the opportunity. He's been given the keys to the castle.
Yeah.
That's the best way to say it.
Yeah.
In L.A., that just wasn't going to happen last year.
Right.
With LeBron, him and LeBron were not very compatible, not very, you know, synergetic, where they just didn't really fit together. You know, Ingram needs the ball in his hands. LeBron needs the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Ingram is not known as a spot-up shooter, even though this year he's shooting pretty well from three, surprisingly, and his mid-range seems to be unguardable at the moment.
Yeah.
Like,
like Sean Livingston, like 2016
Sean, yeah, Sean
finals,
Livingston,
unguardable.
Kevin Durant, like... Kawhi Leonard-esque, like, in terms of his mid-range shooting right now. If he gets there, it's probably going in. I think he's gotten very impressive in terms of his skill set, in terms of his handles, in terms of, obviously, the mid-range we just talked about. It's just so impressive in someone of his size.
Right.
I think his number is going to be great, and, you know, that bag in free agency this summer is going to be even greater.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm going to go buy on Brandon Ingram. He's got the motivation for it. So,
yeah, easy buy for me, too.
Dwight Howard.
Oh, man. Man, this is so tough. Because, like, I will say, like, Dwight, like, I saw that block. I forget who it was on last night, but it was on Twitter, and I was like, I've never seen Dwight Howard move like that in a long time. Like, over the past few years, he's looked pretty washed. Obviously, he's bounced around from a lot of teams. Lakers gave him a chance. I don't know, man. I want to buy in. I'm not sold just yet. I want to buy in, so I'm going to sell. I'm not sold just yet.
Okay.
That's why I'm not buying.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But I do think he's had the strongest showing in the NBA that he's had in years.
Yeah,
in
I agree.
Years.
Of course. I'm going to go... See, I'll be honest. Like, I'm going to go buy, but in the back of my mind, I'm just nervous that, like, Dwight's just going to take the mask off and be like, got you guys. Like, he's just like... He's waiting for them to give him, like, an actual contract because he's still playing... On a contract that is like he's getting paid pennies, pretty much compared to other NBA players. So it's like he has the motivation to just buy in on being a good teammate, where he's setting elite screens, some not legal. He's
whatever.
He's protecting the rim, and more impressive than anything else is he's sliding his feet when he's been challenged in switches. He has looked very impressive. The Lakers film room account has that's one of my favorite Twitter follows. They kind of have been highlighting that a lot this season, and it's so noticeable when he steps in the game. He makes an impact, and you immediately notice the shift. Right now, him and JaVale McGee, like, their plus-minuses couldn't be any different. JaVale McGee has gotten to the point where he's playing. He's still starting, but he plays the first 5 minutes of the first quarter, first 5 minutes of the third quarter, and then he doesn't play. and Dwight Howard, in his, like, a little over 20 minutes a game, or hovering around that, he's just been elite in terms of, like, the hustle and in terms of the selfishness. And I'm gonna buy in, but my fear is it's, like, when is this mask coming off? And he goes back to the Dwight that's asking for post-ups, that, you know, stops hustling when he isn't getting touches. If that guy doesn't come back, he can be elite. But we will have to see on that. I'm still going to go buy.
All right, so next and last on our buy and sell, Gordon Hayward of my beloved Boston Celtics.
Yeah, he balled out against Cleveland last night.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I didn't see it.
He had 39, 17 on 20 shooting.
Yep, he had
incredible
a
shooting
very
numbers.
Clutch, what was it, an offensive board he
got?
And then
and
a
the
finish.
Putback.
Yeah.
And then the
so,
putback.
So, you know, he's definitely looking good right now. I'm going to go buy. If you're going off of the time, this is like lazy explanation, but if you go off the timetable that it took for Paul George to get back to health after his,
right.
you know, scary injury, it was really about like a year and some change. And mm-hmm. right now, you know, Hayward's at a year and some change where I think he's only going to look better as time goes on. You know, he needed last season to kind of just like play, but he wasn't back to, you know, full strength. And
right.
you know, I haven't watched enough Celtics to sit here and claim that in terms of athleticism he's 100%. But from what I've seen, he looks good, he looks solid, and I think minus when you take away Kyrie Irving and obviously Kemba still gets a lot of his touches, but he seems to be more willing to give up the rock.
Right.
I think, you know, Hayward really has an opportunity to continue to grow and return to form to his Utah days. So I'll go buy.
Yeah,
I'll buy on that.
I'm obviously going to buy. I think the most important thing that I've seen from him this year is just his confidence. Like, all last year, and you can't blame him. I mean, after an injury like that, like, you're not going to be athletically the same or mentally the same. He would just pass up on open looks all the time. And I just think that's just because he didn't have his confidence back yet. And now he's got that. He's getting to his mid-range. He's getting to his spots mid-range. He's knocking down threes with consistency. And like you said, like, we're seeing some hustle plays from him. He's still a little bit of a liability on defense just because he hasn't gotten all of that back yet.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, this is all growth. And I think by the end of the season, he's going to be legit. Like, he's going to be back to the way he was at Utah, I think, or at least about to reach that point before he goes into his fourth year with the Celtics. But that's buy or sell.
Yep.
And that's 808s and ankle breaks.
That concludes our episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks. If you know you're fiending for my voice, you can hear me next Tuesday at 1 p.m. the EIC podcast. I guess I'll announce my guest. It might change. Bree Bristol, she'll be on talking about her newest podcast, which is not on the Amherst Wire Podcast Network, but still support it. Race to Interracial, rebirthproject.com. Check that out there. As well as check out our other podcasts on the network.
Yeah.
We got this week in place of the EIC podcast, we had a podcast called Pod Check, where two young ladies investigated the whole vaping crisis and kind of took it from a local campus perspective. So check that out. We got the Transatlantic soccer podcast coming your way next Thursday. And of course, the Zoo Report is going to be out tomorrow. So check that out. Check us out. Make sure you're subscribed to the network. If you're not, what are you doing?
Get on that.
But yeah, we'll see you guys, or you guys will hear us in 2 weeks. Peace.